Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow. All right, glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show. Write down a toll-free telephone number you want to be a part of this extravaganza. I actually think I'm at a point in... Oh, I just dropped all my papers. Hang on. I'm down on the ground on my knees. I'm pulling up the papers. And I got... No, look at Sunshine in there. She wants to race in and help the old man, which is hilarious. I think we're doing some of the best and most important work that we've ever done in our career. And it's not like a pat on the back type of thing at all. It's just, I know what we're doing is so important. I know what we're doing that we're on the right track. I know what we're doing is so counter to everything else you're hearing. And it is, to me, it is great satisfaction to work hard and to be digging deep. I'm not sleeping a lot. I was up at 4:30 in the morning texting and writing and talking and talk to a lot of different people. And so let me just sum it up this way. We have three stories that we're really following for you today. The first is what happened, and 22 people were slaughtered at this Ariana Grande concert last night. We're going to get into that. And that what's so disgustingly evil about this is the fact that this is now targeting... You know, I don't know the age group of kids that like Ariana Grande. I know my daughter at some point did. I don't know if she still does. But it's kind of like, what, you know, between like 6 and 7 years old and 16 years old. Is that about right? Maybe 18 years old. So teenagers and kids that are younger than teenage years. And so this was targeting young children in just an evil, dark, sinister way. And it is amazing that it comes on the heels of what I think is the best speech that President Trump has given as president. Then we have all of the issues we have been following with a huge update today as it relates to Russia collusion, Russia collusion, Russia collusion, Russia collusion, and no evidence, no evidence, no evidence, no evidence, no evidence. And by the way, nobody would ever report. I don't mind if there is at some point some evidence as it is helpful to the family. There have been reports out there that I never reached out to the family. That's not true. That is, and I'm not going to tell who and when and where and how, but I have all the evidence I need going back to the end of last week, reaching out to members of the family. And I'll get to that at some point down the line, because I think it's very, very important. Now, I want to start with what happened. And we got to understand something here. The threat of radical Islamic terror is real. You know, I wrote a book, and I said this on TV last night in 2004, called Deliver Us from Evil. And I know that it's very hard for good people, and that's all of you, I'm sure, listening to this program, are the 99.9999%. To wrap their heads around the fact that there are evil people in the world. But there are evil people in the world. Very evil. And when I did my study, I knew about the gulags and the former Soviet Union and Stalin and obviously Hitler and Nazism and fascism and Imperial Japan and the killing fields. But I started researching it. And it blew me away because... I took a deep dive in confronting truth when I wrote that book. And there is evil in the world. And I know it's hard for good people to wrap their arms around it because it's not your nature. You don't see it. It's not who you are. You don't identify with it. Now, we see it on a small level. Is it not evil if somebody is guilty of rape? Is it not evil to hurt and abuse children? Is it not evil? I mean, I can go through a whole list of instances where somebody just kills somebody out of a rage. Is there not a darkness and evil associated with that? I mean, if you believe mankind is mind, body, and spirit, okay, there are really good people in this world. But there are some really ugly, dark people in this world. You know, is it really evil if you make your money in life selling heroin and crack cocaine and drugs to children for a profit, knowing that you are helping them kill themselves? You're profiting off death? That's evil to me. Then if you look at the big picture, and this is just the research, the facts that I've come up with, over 100 million souls in the last century were killed. Evil. You can look at Russia, the gulags, Stalin. You can look at Adolf Hitler. You can look at Nazism, fascism. What about when we dug up all the skulls, the killing fields in Cambodia? If that's not mass graves of Saddam Hussein, using chemical weapons as he did in the Kurds in the north in Iraq, or more recently, Bashar al-Assad. We've talked on this program, there's evil genocide, Christian genocide in this day and age. Evil exists. And what you saw last night is evil. It is a modern day evil. Radical Islamic terrorism. Now, the irony, sad irony in all of this is we have not paid attention. You know, October 2014, lone wolf, ongoing terror. I mean, you know, virtually all the Western terror attacks, you know, that have been out there. Okay, we can go to the lone wolf, ongoing counterterrorism failure in October 2014. The Sydney hostage taker case, lone wolf syndrome, as PJ Media and Patrick Poole say, you know, in a timeline they laid out. Or that was December 2014, January 2015, the Paris terror attack. February 3rd, 2015, French police terror attack, you know, known wolf syndrome. Copenhagen, Jihadi Jean. Remember we saw the beach decapitation, mass decapitation, James Foley. All of these instances, I can run through it all. Then I can look at America and we can talk about Chattanooga, Fort Hood, the Tsarnaev brothers, the Boston bombing, the Pulse nightclub, and every other case that we hear about, 9/11, 2001. All in the name of jihad, holy war. And then we have a tale of two presidents. We had President Obama on his apology tour at about the same point Donald Trump is now in his presidency, compared to what Donald Trump did before 50 Muslim leaders this past weekend. It was the most powerful speech that I think any president has ever given in response to radical Islamic terrorism. And the fact that he did it with no apologies, no political correctness, no happy talk, that he drew a line in the sand, that he specifically said and framed the fight against ISIS and Islamic terrorism as a battle between good and evil, as he said, you know, a better future is only possible if your nations drive out terrorists and drive out extremists, he said to all of these Arab leaders, 50 countries, drive them out of your places of worship, drive them out of your communities, drive them out of your holy land, drive them out of this earth. Deny all territory to the foot soldiers of evil. Our friends will never question our support, America's support. This is a new America leading from the front, not behind. And he's calling these people out for duplicity, financial support, and a lack of moral clarity. And before Donald Trump gets on the scene, what did we have before that? Basically, one world leader on the world stage that an American president was undermining and hurting. And by the way, I know we're not supposed to try and influence elections, but tried to influence the elections in Israel and defeat the prime minister there, who does have moral clarity, who's not the appeaser Obama was. That is certainly not the peace in our time Chamberlain that Obama was, but he's the Winston Churchill of our time that understands it. And one of the ironies of Obama's horrific deal to the Iranians with, you know, how many billions of taxpayer dollars is that it created a possible alliance that nobody really thought was possible. And Donald Trump is now trying to do something that never happened before. That, and it's emerging on its own. The Israelis, the Saudis, the Sunni Saudis, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, the Emirates, and other countries that don't want Iranian hegemony or a nuclear-armed Iran are now uniting. Now, if you think this isn't tied, it's tied. If you don't think, we'll have Nigel Farage on in the next hour. If you don't think you should pay attention to the Islamization of Europe and the dramatic increase in attacks that have taken place in that continent and think that that can happen here, then you're not recognizing the truth of human history. The evil that I studied and wrote about in my book where imagine a Nazi soldier every single day of the week. His job is to, you know, people pull up in trains. They get off the train. Then they say, how many of you are carpenters, plumbers, seamstresses, this, that, whatever skill you have? Oh, come forward. We're going to need your help. And then walking those people to their death and lying to them so they stay calm and organized. How does an evil human being like that go home and justify what they did that day and have dinner with his own family? That's evil. There's evil today that would go into an arena in Manchester in England and try and kill young girls anywhere between, I guess, 5 and 18, targeting them with the most despicable shrapnel put in a bomb. That when we played it last night, I could not believe how strong that bomb sounded. It was horrible.
Oh, my God. What's going on? Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Now, I say this is that I hope and I pray that we have a new resolve and we understand, listen, I don't care what your politics are. I don't care what your views in life are. But you certainly have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness any way you choose. And every human being does. I believe every human being was created by God. And evil, for whatever reason, emerges in different form. Communism, fascism, Nazism. And now we've got radical Islamism. And it's a clear and present danger to every man, woman, and child on this earth. And I admire the president for taking such a strong stand. And I'm going to say this, if we don't unite and defeat it, how many millions potentially will die? How many human souls will be lost in this century? How many individuals, how many mothers and fathers need to suffer like the 22 parents that don't have their children today? Or the however many injured at this point? How many? Back, our other top story of the day. Huge, huge developments as it relates to Russia collusion, Russia collusion, Russia collusion. We are going to lay out the case that there's no evidence and that there is another narrative that is emerging, and we are asking the questions in spite of massive intimidation to silence me and others. I'll tell you about that.
Issues, ETC.net.
A podcast for social conservatives.
Issues, ETC.net.
Abortion, gay marriage, Islamic terrorism.
Issues, ETC.net.
Radical feminism, embryonic stem cell research, religious liberty.
Issues, ETC.net.
Physician-assisted suicide, judicial activism, hate crimes.
Issues, ETC.net.
When you surf the web tonight, check out issuesetc.net.
Have you ever requested that a U.S. person's name be unmasked?
Yes, I have.
Former CIA Director Brennan, he did unmask people. We have a investigative report on the program today with Sarah Carter, John Solomon, and Kirk Wiebe, and you don't want to miss where this is now going about unmasking, about surveillance, about intelligence leaking, and about the dramatic increase in the times that people in the presidential election cycle, how many people were in fact surveilled and unmasked, and the level of all of this. Now, I'm going to set this up for the next half hour. And what I'm going to do is we are going to get into this whole Russia, 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 tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, Russia, Trump, Trump, Russia, Trump, Russia. And I have new information today that I have to share with you. And I am going to play the Democrats saying no evidence, no evidence, no evidence, no evidence, including Brennan today. And then we're going to ask the question, how is it the media continues to advance a conspiracy theory with no evidence, no evidence, no evidence, no evidence? And then we're going to look at what is available out there that we should, the questions we should be asking the people we need to talk to, or at least try to talk to, how the media has failed you, how it is the greatest example. This now has the chance of blowing up into every single media outlet, every hour they devoted to Russia, Trump, conspiracy, conspiracy, conspiracy with no evidence for months and months and months. Do you realize if it ever turned out to be anything else, and it's a possibility, I'm only asking questions, now they're attacking me. If it turns out to be something else, that this is Dan Rather, National Guard, on maximum doses, lethal doses of human growth hormone and steroids. And will confirm that which I told you in 2007 and 8. Journalism is dead. It's amazing how many liberal journalists reaching out to me right now. My advice to you, sit back, roll your recorders, and for all you in the liberal destroy Trump media, learn something. Learn to think anew. Learn to open your mind. Learn to stop being the sheep that most of you are. We'll continue. 25 till the top of the hour. Our toll-free telephone number on the Sean Hannity Show is 800-941-SEAN. Nigel Farage, who was one of the leading movers and shakers in the Brexit movement, he's going to join us, European Parliament member. We're going to talk about the attacks last night, the sad latest example of radical Islamic terror. And we're going to go back to and talk about the words of President Trump over the weekend. His best speech by far, not covered because of the conspiracy, Trump, Russia, 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 Russia conspiracy, which is where I want to go. Then we've got breaking news with Sarah Carter, John Solomon, and Kirk Wiebe on, well, the issue of unmasking and the issue of basically telling you what you need to know about the CIA testimony. He confirmed unmasking earlier today, and he acknowledged through Trey Gowdy, which is what I'm going to get to in a second, there's no evidence. Now, here's where we're going to start here. So for months, we have heard about this Russia-Trump collusion story. Months. It has been a narrative on cable news, major newspapers, blogs, news sites, everywhere. It has dominated the news in such a way that I would argue it's actually gotten in the way of the president doing his job, fulfilling his promises to you, the American people. With all that said, let me start at the beginning, and I know that we have liberals in the media now listening to this program. I'd like to formally welcome you to the Sean Hannity Show. We're here 3 to 6 Eastern Standard Time every day. 3 hours a day of listening is all we ask. That's not too much. And because you are a bunch of sheep, almost all of you, if not all, that need crayons and Legos and coloring books and therapy dogs and aromatherapy because Donald Trump got elected and you didn't see it coming, because many of you and your publications and your cable channels colluded with Hillary Clinton, as proven by WikiLeaks, I understand that you want to prove yourselves correct. And you seem to have an aversion to looking deeply into the truth and getting out of your groupthink mentality. I am under as much fire as I have been when I went after Barack Obama and vetted him and his radicalism and Ayers and Dorn and Alinsky and Black Liberation Theology and the Church of Reverend Wright. And he is like family to me, and Acorn and Frank Marshall Davis and, you know, the New York Times Christoph with a first-rate accent said the call to prayer is the most beautiful thing at sunset, the most beautiful thing in the world. And the fact that I mentioned it meant so many different things in the minds of the left. So let me start at the beginning. We have been hearing Russia-Trump collusion forever. Now let's listen to Democrats, ending with Dianne Feinstein last week and Brennan this morning. No evidence. Listen to the Democrats say that there's no evidence. And then as you listen to this, ask yourself, well, why has the media been spending endless hours if we don't have any evidence at this point?
But Mr. Clapper then went on to say that to his knowledge, there was no evidence of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. We did not conclude any evidence in our report. And when I say our report, that is the NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the director of national intelligence, that had anything, any reflection of collusion between the members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that in our report. Was Mr. Clapper wrong when he said that?
I think he's right about characterizing the report, which you all have read.
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the director of national intelligence, that had anything that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
Can you say definitively that there was collusion? There were people affiliated with the Trump campaign who were working with Russians to time the release of damaging information about Hillary Clinton that had been hacked either from John Podesta or the DNC?
I don't think we can say anything definitively at this point.
Have you seen anything, either through intelligence briefings, anything to back up any of the accusations that
you've
made?
They have the documentation that they did the hacking on the DNC.
Right.
And on some of us, you know, that.
But the collusion, though.
No, we have not.
Do you have evidence that there was, in fact, collusion between Trump associates and Russia during the campaign?
Not at this time.
Have you seen anything that suggests any collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign?
Well, there's an awful lot of smoke there, let's put it that way. People that might have said they were involved, to what extent they were involved, to what extent the president might have known about these people or whatever. There's nothing there from that standpoint that we have seen directly linking our president to any of that.
Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know.
I don't know. No evidence, no collusion, no evidence, no collusion. Then why is the media gone insane with this hour after hour after hour and day after day after day after day, leading to talk of impeachment and the 530, you know, document dump, big lie, like by the Washington Post, numerous times proven to be liars. About, for example, well, the deputy attorney general threatened to quit. No, he didn't threaten to quit. Oh, Comey asked for more money just before Comey was fired. No, he didn't. The New York Times story, that was proven false, too. They get it wrong, and they create an environment which is just breathless hysteria and breathless reporting. Now, I actually did something. The one person that would know the answer to where the information from WikiLeaks came from is Julian Assange. Now, by the way, if there ever is any evidence, I want to see it and I'll report on it. If there's evidence of collusion, I will report it. I promise you. I haven't seen it. They haven't seen it. Now, Julian Assange, I've interviewed how many times? Four times on the press? Three times?
Yeah, like three or four
times.
Three
or four times? Okay.
Yeah.
And we had him on TV while all these reporters were off for Christmas. I was actually taking time out of my vacation. I went to London to interview Julian Assange. And was it Russia?
Our source is not the Russian government.
So in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
Not given anything. Now, some of you might say, well, Hannity, you're trusting Julian Assange. The country doesn't like Julian Assange. You years ago said bad things about him. I've changed my opinion, as I said. Okay. He would know. He's the one guy. Has anybody in the media gone there? Anybody asked him? Anybody? Have they tried? I have. I'm not going to report on my sources. I know much more than I'm going to say today. Let me put it that way. And I'm not holding back on you. Now, Julian Assange paid very close attention to the Dutch interview he gave, where he talks about whistleblowers and brave people that risk their lives. And without skipping a beat, unprompted mentions Seth Rich. Listen.
Our whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material and often very significant risks. As a 27-year-old who works for the DNC, who was shot in the back, murdered just 2 weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. So
That was just a robbery, I believe, wasn't it?
No, there's no finding. So
what are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that our sources take risks and they become concerned to see things occurring like that.
But was he one of your sources then? I mean,
we don't comment on who our sources are.
But why make the suggestion about a young guy being shot in the streets of Washington?
Because we have to understand how high the stakes are in the United States and that our sources face serious risks. That's why they come to us, so we can protect their anonymity.
But it's quite something to suggest a murder. So, that's basically what you're doing.
Well, that others have suggested that we are investigating to understand what happened in that situation with Seth Rich. I think it is a concerning situation. There's not a conclusion yet. We wouldn't be willing to state a conclusion, but we are concerned about it. And more importantly, a variety of WikiLeaks sources are concerned when that kind of thing happens.
Okay. He's the one guy that knows the source. He's it. Now, Hillary is implied, oh, WikiLeaks, oh, Trump and the Russians. She's gone that far. Then the narrative's just gone and gone and gone and gone and gone. Is it all a big lie? Now, you got to understand something here. When he goes, whistleblowers take great effort and great risks and unprompted, goes into Seth Rich, unprompted, and then sort of realize, uh-oh, maybe I'm not going to reveal all of this. It sounds to me, my logical interpretation says, wow, it sounds like to me, and I can't confirm and I'm asking the question and don't, you know, I'm such a horrible person for asking the question. Was he saying Seth Rich is the person? Is it possible that it was never Russia, the source for WikiLeaks? Is it possible, because Julian said it wasn't Russia, it wasn't any state, is it possible that there was a disgruntled Bernie supporter in the DNC that had evidence of corruption at the highest level, an attempt to absolutely deny a fair shot at their candidate to win the DNC nomination, and that person was able to accumulate evidence and wanted to get it out there as a whistleblower, a truth teller, a brave individual? Take Seth Rich out of this for a second. By the way, these reports that I haven't talked to the family are not true. These reports that I've not reached out to the family, I have evidence going back to, I think, Friday. Not true. Now, here's where it gets even more interesting. There is and I love these guys like Julian and Kim.com is in New Zealand, kind of like a Julian Assange, controversial figure, smart. He was able to break in, I think, into NASA or one of those, one government office at 16, just like Julian broke into the DOD and NASA, you know, at 16. They're so smart, these guys. Now, the interesting thing about them is they have this ability and people hate them, but they've been warning us for so long that there is cyber security vulnerability in this country. And at some point, our government never fixed it. Shame on you, shame on you, shame on you. At some point, it becomes shame on me that our government can keep getting hacked into. Now, Kim.com, in an interview with Bloomberg in May of 2015, said this.
So what Julian Assange is doing is putting a spotlight on all these secrets.
How often do you talk to him?
Look, I like these guys, you know. I look up to them. I think they are very brave. They're going through a very hard time, you know, and they chose to do that for the betterment of all of us. So, yeah, I love to talk to them.
So you said you were going to bring the Internet Party to the U.S. in 2016.
Yeah.
Why? What's your goal?
Well, because I think there's a big group of people out there that disagree with what's going on. You know, they want to have their privacy back. They want to have internet freedom.
You tweeted that you were going to be Hillary's worst nightmare in 2016. How so?
Well, I have to say it's probably more Julian. But I'm aware of some of the things that are going to be roadblocks for her. So, you know, if I can provide some transparency with these people and make them part of what the Internet Party stands for, then, you know, I will be happy to do that.
You're saying Julian Assange is going to be Hillary's worst nightmare in 2016.
I think so, yeah. Well, he has access to information. Well, Hillary hates Julian. She is just an adversary of, I think, internet freedom. And
Kim.com was right. Way ahead of the curve. Kim.com, and I'm not going to reveal anything that I know beyond what I'm about to tell you now. Kim.com has released a statement today. I'm going to read it to you. Now, for those that accuse me of pushing a conspiracy theory, you are the biggest bunch of phony hypocrites in the entire world, because all of you in the media that are saying such a thing are as guilty of that as anybody with Russia, 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 collusion, collusion, collusion. So I don't need lectures from people that went off half-cocked, half-assed, that are agenda-driven, ideologically driven. That's number one. So he writes, I know that Seth Rich was involved in the DNC leak. Seth Rich was a hero. I know this because in late 2014, a person contacted me about helping me to start a branch of the Internet Party in the United States, a party that he was supporting in New Zealand. He called himself Panda, and I now know that Panda was Seth Rich. By the way, I have confirmed through another source that that, in fact, was an email or a communication of Seth. Panda advised me he's working on voter analytic tools and other technologies that the Internet Party may find helpful. I communicated with Panda on a number of topics, including corruption, the influence of corporate money in politics. He wanted to change that from the inside. I was referring to what I knew when I did an interview with Bloomberg in New Zealand in May of 2015. In that interview, I hinted that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks would release information about Hillary Clinton in the upcoming election. The Rich family has reached out to me to ask that I be sensitive to their loss in my public comments. That request is entirely reasonable. I have consulted with my attorneys. I accept that my full statement should be provided to the authorities. I am prepared to do that so there can be a full investigation. My lawyers will speak with the authorities regarding the proper process. If my evidence is required to be given in the United States, I would be prepared to do so if appropriate arrangements are made. I would need a guarantee from the special counsel Mueller on behalf of the United States of safe passage from New Zealand to the U.S. and back. In the coming days, we will be communicating with the appropriate authorities to make the necessary arrangements. In the meantime, I will make no further comment. Now, just to close the circle here, the family's actually on the internet saying they want to find the truth. I feel so badly for this family and what they have been through and what they are going through, and my thoughts and prayers are with them. This issue is so big now that the entire Russia collusion narrative is hanging by a thread. If, in fact, take Seth out of it, there was a whistleblower within the DNC, a truth teller, that actually was the source for WikiLeaks and not Russia, working with the Trump campaign. These are questions that I have a moral obligation to ask. And I will do the mainstream media's job like I have most of my career, like we got it right. On Obama, his radicalism, his record, on Trump having a chance to win, on Michael Brown, on Trayvon Martin, on Cambridge police, on Baltimore. We're right, they're wrong. Like I was right in Atlanta in the Jewell case when everybody else said, oh, he fits the profile of a lone bomber, Richard Jewell. I was right then, too.
What's going on? Oh my God! Oh my God!
everyone was just screaming and shouting, saying that it could be a bomb. And there were people shouting for the kids. There were people shouting for the half out of five people. And as we went out into the concourse, like, to get out of the arena, there was just bodies scattered about everywhere. And I just was throwing people's belongings on the floor. And we just ran. All the traffic was at a standstill, and we were just running through the roads. And oh, it was just chaos.
Quick, Corey. Which way? Come on. Corey needs to get round. Corey, get round this way. Come on. Corey. Come on, lad.
Massive bang, and then everyone just started running towards us, screaming and crying, and didn't know what had gone on. So everyone was like trampling over us, and it was just awful.
Yeah, we're just really confused. This big bang, smelled smoke, everyone was screaming and crying, and we were just told to come round here and didn't even know what was going on.
20 seats all around me, it was all children with just a parent with them, like 3 and 4. Kids and just one parent accompanying them. Whoever's done this, they've known that it's a concert. What's mostly for kids.
On exiting the building, we then saw crowds of people and children devastated. We went to the car, which was 10 seconds away. As soon as we got to the car, you could smell the burning. Coming out then was quite a fluid operation. There were people around us. The children were devastated.
At terrible moments like these, it is customary for leaders, politicians and others to condemn the perpetrators and declare that the terrorists will not win. But the fact that we have been here before, and the fact that we need to say this again, does not make it any less true. For as so often while we experienced the worst of humanity in Manchester last night, we also saw the best. The cowardice of the attacker met the bravery of the emergency services and the people of Manchester. The attempt to divide us met countless acts of kindness that brought people closer together. And in the days ahead, those must be the things we remember. The images we hold in our minds should not be those of senseless slaughter, but of the ordinary men and women who put concerns about their own safety to one side and rushed to help. Of the men and women of the emergency services who worked tirelessly to bring comfort, to help, and to save lives. Of the messages of solidarity and hope of all those who opened their homes to the victims. For they are the images that embody the spirit of Manchester and the spirit of Britain. A spirit that through years of conflict and terrorism has never been broken and will never be broken. There will be difficult days ahead. We offer our thoughts and prayers to the family and friends of those affected. We offer our full support to the authorities, the emergency and the security services as they go about their work. And we all, every single one of us, stand with the people of Manchester at this terrible time. And today, let us remember those who died, and let us celebrate those who helped, safe in the knowledge that the terrorists will never win, and our values, our country, and our way of life will always prevail.
That, of course, Theresa May commenting on the terror attack. We now have 22 dead and so many others injured. Yet another in a long series of attacks against innocent men, women, and children. And what made this so dark and so cruel and so sinister, as every life matters, but the targeting of young girls that are not even teenage years and those that are teenagers in an attempt to slaughter innocent men, women, and children to advance a caliphate, to advance 22 dead. ISIS strikes again. They say it's only the beginning, and the world, the free world, finds itself once again under attack as this culture conflict, this clash of cultures now continues. They've identified this man as 23 years old, Salman Abidi, and his parents were Libyan refugees. Loud Islamic prayers in the street. The girls killed, literally, this, if this had gotten inside the arena, I shudder to think this bomb was made to maximize and damage, death, and injury. That's what all that shrapnel is about. ISIS is warning a car ramming will follow. Talking and listening to the eyewitnesses, blood is everywhere, skin is everywhere. We have all the recent attacks. I can go through them all throughout Europe. I've warned of the Islamization of Europe. We've discussed at length in this country, and it was a big part of the election, the whole issue of national security, calling evil out for what it is, radical Islamic terrorism. We've talked at length about the need to vet refugees from countries that have opinions and values that directly contradict our constitutional values. If you grow up under Sharia and you're a man and you think you have a right to tell a woman she can't drive a car, you think you have a right to tell her how to dress, you know, I'm not even bringing up the brutality of genital mutilation by some groups and countries. You bring up the issue of women can't travel abroad, can't leave their home like in Saudi Arabia without a male relative. You bring up the killing of gays and lesbians just because they're gay and lesbian. The persecution of Christians and Jews in many of these countries that practice Sharia. You can't build a temple. You can't build a church. Nigel Farage is a member of the European Parliament and a leader of the Brexit movement. Was in Manchester last night. He's a friend of the program, a friend of mine. And I want to reiterate, Nigel, what I said to you on TV last night. My thoughts, my prayers, you know, we love our friends in Great Britain, our friends, especially tonight and today in Manchester. And our thoughts and prayers go with you. And I'm hoping for the day we don't have to talk about thoughts and prayers anymore because we've defeated this modern-day evil.
Well, I would like to think so too, Sean, though I suspect it may be a long time in coming. I mean, I have, as you well know, for many, many years, given warnings, not just in the United Kingdom, but across the whole of Europe too, to say we were making some very bad mistakes. Mistake number one, multiculturalism, encouraging people to live separately in our communities rather than mixing in together. And mistake number two, allowing in huge numbers of people across the Mediterranean without the ability to security check a single one of them. So I look at what happened last night and I almost begin to sort of tear my hair out, thinking, when are our leaders actually going to do something? Now, you played the clip of Theresa May, and yes, she was very statesmanlike. But let's just remind listeners, before becoming Prime Minister, she was our Home Secretary, in charge of our home affairs for 6 years. And I have seen, I'm being honest here about my own country, I have seen very little attempt to stop radicalization in our schools, in our prisons, and I have not seen an immigration system that sufficiently vets on a security basis. And Sean, I can tell you that what happened last night has really shocked people. You know, going for young girls coming out of a concert is a new low. And I think that what the British public are now going to be demanding is, what are our leaders now? Not what are they going to say, what are they going to do?
Well, it's a matter of that. And you know something, one of the things I think I love more about you than anything else is, well, I love your spirit. I love your fight. I love your ability to take hits and you take it with good humor. And you're funny and you're a good guy to hang out with. And I'd love to go to a pub and hang out with you for hours and hours under better circumstances. But the thing that I admire the most about you is you so love America and you so care about our future. And the relationship between Great Britain and the United States has got to always remain that strong. I care deeply what happened last night in your country. You care deeply when things happen here. But you have steadfastly warned my fellow citizens in America, don't make the mistakes that Europe is making.
Absolutely. And I want to reiterate that point today as strongly as I possibly can. We now, in this country, have 3,500 suspected jihadi terrorists. I say suspected. Belgium, which is a relatively tiny country, has 18,000 people. When you start to get to numbers like that, no security service is big enough to keep tabs on it. And I just want to say once again to Americans, do not make the mistakes that we've made. Encourage people to live and work together and not to be in separate communities in our towns and cities. And be really careful who you let into the country. And when I see your president who tried so hard to make sure that from seven countries you rethought the methods by which people could get in, and to see American judges trying to stop this from happening. You know, we've got a problem here. We've got institutions in America, in the United Kingdom, who are trying to stop us protecting our children. Something there is wrong, and I know that Trump won't give up. I know that in his heart he wants to keep America safe, and I pray that he does so.
It is beyond incredible. I think he gave the best speech of his presidency in Saudi Arabia before Muslim leaders. We'll go over those words when we get back. Nigel Farage is with us. He is a member of the European Parliament, Fox News contributor, leader of the Brexit movement, and has been sending one admonition after another to this country so that Americans may be safe and not make the mistake that Europe has made.
The path to peace begins right here, on this ancient soil, in this sacred land. America is prepared to stand with you in pursuit of shared interests and common security. But the nations of the Middle East cannot wait for American power to crush this enemy for them. The nations of the Middle East will have to decide what kind of future they want for themselves, for their country, and frankly, for their families and for their children. It's a choice between two futures, and it is a choice America cannot make for you. A better future is only possible if your nations drive out the terrorists and drive out the extremists. Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land. And drive them out of this earth. For our part, America is committed to adjusting our strategies to meet evolving threats and new facts. We will discard those strategies that have not worked and will apply new approaches informed by experience, talent, and judgment. Saudi Arabia also joined us this week in placing sanctions on one of the most senior leaders of Hezbollah. Of course, there is still much work to be done. That means honestly confronting the crisis of Islamic extremism and the Islamicists and Islamic terror of all kinds. We must stop what they're doing to inspire, because they do nothing to inspire but kill. And we are having a very profound effect if you look at what's happened recently. And it means standing together against the murder of innocent Muslims, the oppression of women, the persecution of Jews, and the slaughter of Christians. Religious leaders must make this absolutely clear. Barbarism will deliver you no glory. Piety to evil will bring you no dignity. If you choose the path of terror, your life will be empty, your life will be brief, and your soul will be fully condemned. And political leaders must speak out to affirm the same idea. Heroes don't kill innocents, they save them.
In light of what happened yesterday, how profound. I talked yesterday about a tale of two presidents. Here is Donald Trump. Terrorists do not worship God, they worship death. And he goes on, you know, here's the beauty of what he did before Arab leaders. No apologies, no political correctness, no happy talk. This is good versus evil. And he said it. He framed the fight against ISIS and other terrorist groups as a, quote, battle of good versus evil. Drive them out of your places of worship, drive them out of your communities, drive them out of your holy land, and drive them out of this earth. Why so innocent young girls are not going to be targeted at Ariana Grande concert. And that they, in their sick, evil, demented push towards a caliphate, can't kill innocents anymore.
Having spoken to the mayor of New York, our people, his office, our people having spoken to the police here, the advice we've received is 29 people have been injured. There are my thoughts and prayers. The advice we've received from the police service here and from the mayor's office is to carry on business as usual. I'm not going to speculate as to who was responsible. I'm not going to speculate as to how the police in York should react. What I do know is part and parcel of living in a great global city is you've got to be prepared for these things. You've got to be vigilant. You've got to support the police doing an incredibly hard job. You've got to support the security services. And I think speculating when you don't know the facts is unwise.
News that we're getting from the Manchester police this morning, the statements that they're putting out of mothers that they found who are still looking for their daughters and daughters that they found who are still looking for their mothers and they can't find the rest of their families. And I think that's what is making... Europe is getting used to attacks like this, Mika. We have to, because we are never going to be able to totally wipe this out. As ISIS gets squeezed in Syria and Iraq, we're going to see more of these kinds of attacks taking place in Europe, and Europe is starting to get used to that. None of us are used to having children targeted in this way, no. Young girls targeted in this way.
And Martha, as you said, the people in Manchester are determined to kind of go back to daily life, but this is also likely to inflame anti-Islamic sentiment across Britain, across Europe.
It sure could, George. You know, Manchester itself is a very multicultural city. There's a large Muslim population with many there for generations. So a headscarf attracts little attention there. And notably, Manchester did not vote in favor of Brexit. But an attack like this, as you said, is much bigger than Manchester itself and will likely create backlash.
Do you understand the insanity? That was about a year ago, the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, actually saying, well, you know, we got to get used to these terror attacks. Then it's NBC's Katy Kay suggest, oh, we've got to get used to these terror attacks. And there's Georgie Stephanopoulos, Clinton sycophant that he is, and discussing with somebody worried about anti-Islamic backlash after the Manchester terrorist attack. Nobody wants any backlash against innocent people. What we want is an end to radical Islamic terror. How hard is this for people to wrap their arms around? This is one of our two top stories today. We are also following the unfolding issues, the statement by Kim.com, and more evidence. Brennan today, former CIA director. Oh, no, we don't. No evidence. No specific evidence. I suspect, but no evidence. No evidence. No evidence. All the Democrats, no evidence. No evidence. No evidence. How, with this no evidence, and Democrats keep saying no evidence, how have we had months and months and months and months of conspiracy theories? Months of it without any evidence. A conspiracy theory advanced, and by me asking questions about whether or not is it something else besides Russia, because Julian Assange said it's not Russia, and Julian Assange talked about brave whistleblowers that take risks and immediately transition to the name Seth Rich. Is it really so horrible and awful and mean that I ask, well, was that the source? That's all I'm asking. And I am under fire. Oh, I'm way, way under fire. There are people that don't want me on the air anymore at all. Anymore asking questions on your behalf or pointing out that they lie and that they have an agenda to destroy the president. I'm going to have more about this at the top of the hour. Also, Sarah Carter, senior national security correspondent, has breaking news. Patrick Poole is the national security correspondent, PJ Media. And also joining us, Chris Gobatz is with us, national security consultant, vice president of Understanding the Threat. Now, you may remember Chris's strong testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee last year and willful blindness, the consequences of the agency's efforts to de-emphasize radical Islam and combating terrorism. And welcome both of you to the program. But Chris, tell us about what you testified about and what you did. As I understand, you actually, you know, were an intern with the Council on American Relations, CARE, in Virginia in 07.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Sean. So, When I was working under cyber with CARE, and I want to emphasize for the audience, I posed as a Muslim convert. I'm actually a Christian. but I posed as a Muslim convert to get into inside of Hamas doing business as carrots. And what I testified in front of the U.S. Senate last year is very applicable to this morning and today after the Manchester attacks, which is that the Muslim Brotherhood, who is working to influence our Senate Intelligence, Judiciary, and Homeland Security committees, has the exact same ideology as the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, which is to establish an Islamic State under Sharia. That is why they are fighting the jihad, whether it's in Manchester, whether it's in Syria, or whether it's CARE influencing our homeland security right here in the United States. Look, we have to accept reality, Sean, and reality is that all these jihadi groups all over the planet tell us why they are fighting. And it's interesting to me that all these groups, whether it's Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, the Muslim Brotherhood, fill in the blank, how is it that they're all getting their version of Islam wrong in the exact same way? So what we have to acknowledge is that Islam, they are fighting for Allah, and they are waging jihad, and they are the basis for all of their fighting is the Sharia, which is derived right out of the Quran and right out of the Sunnah of their prophet Muhammad. So Islam is the root of the problem. At some point, we have to acknowledge that, or we're going to continue to lose this war.
Let me go to you, Patrick Poole, and get your thoughts on all of this.
Well, Sean, interestingly, just last week in the UK, historian Tom Holland did a program on Channel 4, one of their channels over there, addressing this issue about how much of ISIS's ideology is actually rooted in historical Islam. And, I mean, it was very carefully crafted. It wasn't an attempt to demonize. And yet still, he got viciously attacked last week and Islamophobe, et cetera. And this is the pattern that we see any time that anybody tries to raise an issue, including Muslims themselves. You know, and I think Dr. Zudi Jasser, who's here in the United States, has tried to raise the issue. Look, you know, we've got a problem, and he gets denounced from from the pulpit of his own mosque out there in Scottsdale, Arizona. And we've got to find a way to break through that engages the Muslim community, but begins to deal with the fact that that this problem is not going away. And if the Muslim community says that they're the ones to solve it, well, you know, it's time for them to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, Sean, that we have to see from a national security perspective is 15 years after 9/11, and we still have not identified the enemy, who they are, why they're fighting, even though the enemy in this war tells us that they're Muslims waging jihad, and the blueprint for their doctrine, the reason that they're fighting, is the Sharia, to establish the Sharia all over the planet. And that we see that over the last 1,400 years of Islamic history. And to Patrick's point, we have to have that conversation nationally. We have to start discussing that. And part of the reason that these terror attacks are so effective is that it shuts down the discussion. And that is why the Muslim Brotherhood worked so hard in this country to shut down. You know, the company that I work for, Understanding the Threat, we train law enforcement on the enemy threat doctrine, Sharia, the jihadi network here in the U.S., which is primarily the Muslim Brotherhood. And then we train law enforcement how to investigate jihadi groups in their community. And groups like CARE and the Muslim Brotherhood fight viciously and slander and smear us everywhere we go so that we can't even get in the room to train law enforcement. And if law enforcement doesn't understand this threat, if our military doesn't understand this threat, then you can't target an enemy that you refuse to identify, and therefore you can never defeat.
What we see here with this Manchester bombing, again, is this pattern of a known wolf already known to officials, and we've seen this pattern already this year. Six out of seven terror attacks in Westminster, in the Orly attack in France, the Stockholm vehicle attack, where he ran down a bunch of people on the street. Every single one of these cases in the wolves. And it's not just over in Europe. Here in the U.S., we had the Fort Lauderdale airport shooter here back in December, who again was known to authorities. The guy who bombed New York and New Jersey back in September, again, his father had flagged him to the FBI as a known wolf. Orlando, they had done two investigations on him previously. In my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, we had Muhammad Berry, who went into an Israeli deli with a machete and began slashing people. Again, he had been previously investigated by the FBI for terrorism. The Garland terror attack, which I think is one of the most underreported terrorism stories here in the U.S. in the past couple of years, where the two suspects were, they had an FBI undercover agent inside the cell who did nothing, apparently, to prevent the attack. And one of the suspects had been charged previously. On terrorism.
All right, we got to take a quick break. Guys, stay right there. Patrick Poole, Chris Gobatz. All right, as we continue, Patrick Poole is with us, and we also continue with Chris Gobatz, who's here. All right, let me just go back to have all of you followed, and Patrick, I know you have, this whole narrative about Russia-Trump collusion and the issue, and I play montage after montage, Democrat after Democrat, saying there's no evidence, including today, including last week, Dianne Feinstein. How does the media get away with advancing this narrative night after night after night after night, Russia, 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 when they all admit there's no evidence? How is that possible?
Well, Sean, I think one of the things that we see is that there's no punishment for the media being wrong. I mean, time and again, we see these stories fall apart within hours of them, you know, breaking news. And, you know, we see all the blue check mark people on Twitter, you know, this is an outrage, et cetera. And then the story falls apart. There's no repercussion for the media when they get it horrifically wrong.
100%. There's no repercussions at all. I mean, you know, I guess maybe, Chris, you can relate to it in this sense, because, you know, here you infiltrated radicalism. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was a life-changing experience. And one of the things that I noticed when I was working inside the Muslim Brotherhood, specifically CARE, was that the cozy relationship that the Muslim Brotherhood has with the media, to your point, how does the media get away with this? Well, they're working in this particular incident a day after Manchester. I can promise you from my experience working with the Muslim Brotherhood that CARE is working with all of their media contacts right now to get the narrative out there that this attack has nothing to do with Islam. And so the media is more than willing to work with groups like the Muslim Brotherhood, who have the exact same ideology as the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda, to shut down any discussion about Islam being part of the problem. This war that we're seeing right now, Sean, we see this war as one line of operation where it's people pulling triggers and it's blowing things up, and it's awful and it's terrorizing and it's barbaric and it's savage. But the big war right now is the war of narratives. And when the media is constantly talking about Russia, necessarily we are not having the discussion about the real problems like border security, like jihad, how to defeat jihad. We're not having those discussions. We are on this show because you have the courage to actually talk about this. But other media outlets out there, they're asking the opinions of groups like the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE what they think about this. And, of course, they're going to direct the line of conversation away from the real threat, which is jihad and Sharia.
It is such a scary thought. And, you know, one of the most frustrating things from my part is that at the very least, there is success among the liberal, ideological, destroy Trump media and the left in this country, especially the deep state and Democrats, that all they want to do is muddy the waters to such a large degree that they prevent the president from actually doing his job. Now, he's not so far been distracted from that. House Republicans, congressmen and senators, Republicans, they're weak. That's problematic. You know, I mean, Patrick, you and I have discussed that many times.
Yes, Sean, absolutely. And, you know, we see that with the budget, with, you know, which President Trump has just rolled out, Congress hasn't acted on virtually all but two of the appropriations bills. They're in the process of boxing him into a continuing resolution in September, along with the debt ceiling, where all the bad things get funded and none of President Trump's agenda gets a dime.
It's unbelievable. All right, Chris, thank you. Patrick, thank you. Toll free, our telephone number is 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. When we come back, our good friend, Sarah Carter, senior national security correspondent, circa.com. Kirk Wiebe, former senior analyst, NSA whistleblower. Join us to discuss what's really going on here behind the persistence of the Democrats and this Russia collusion agenda. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. All right. News roundup and information overload hour on the Sean Hannity Show. Hang on. I'm sending a... all right. There it is. 800-941-SEAN number. All right. Now, news roundup. I want to just go back to... We've got two big stories we're following today. One is the incredible bravery and the strength and how Donald Trump absolutely eviscerated the entire world and blew them away with no apologies, no PC, no happy talk, and drew a line that this fight against ISIS and other terror groups is a battle between good and evil, because it is a battle between good and evil. And how he talked about Arab nations and a new policy of principled realism that is rooted in finding partners, imploring the leaders of more than 50 Arab countries to their face, deny all territory to the foot soldiers of evil, drive them out. This is what he said, drive them out.
The path to peace begins right here, on this ancient soil, in this sacred land. America is prepared to stand with you in pursuit of shared interests and common security. But the nations of the Middle East cannot wait for American power to crush this enemy for them. The nations of the Middle East will have to decide what kind of future they want for themselves, for their country, and frankly, for their families and for their children. It's a choice between two futures, and it is a choice America cannot make for you. A better future is only possible if your nations drive out the terrorists and drive out the extremists. Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land, and drive them out of this earth. For our part, America is committed to adjusting our strategies to meet evolving threats and new facts. We will discard those strategies that have not worked and will apply new approaches informed by experience, talent, and judgment.
Story one, a president that understands and the battle of good versus evil. Story number two is again today on top of the montage we keep playing. No evidence, no evidence. Here's all the Democrats. No evidence of Russia collusion with the Trump campaign.
But Mr. Clapper then went on to say that to his knowledge, there was no evidence of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. We did not conclude any evidence in our report. And when I say our report, that is the NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, any reflection of collusion between the members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that in our report. Was Mr. Clapper wrong when he said that?
I think he's right about characterizing the report, which you all have read.
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
Can you say definitively that there was collusion? There were people affiliated with the Trump campaign who were working with Russians to time the release of damaging information about Hillary Clinton that had been hacked either from John Podesta or the DNC?
I don't think we can say anything definitively at this point.
Have you seen anything, either intelligence briefings, through intelligence briefings, anything to back up any of the accusations that
you've
made?
They have the documentation that they did the hacking.
The hacking.
On the DNC.
Right.
And on some of us, you know, that
have. But the collusion, though.
No. We have not.
Do you have evidence that there was, in fact, collusion between Trump associates and Russia during the campaign?
Not at this time.
Have you seen anything that suggests any collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign?
Well, there's an awful lot of smoke there, let's put it that way. People that might have said they were involved, to what extent they were involved, to what extent the president might have known about these people or whatever. There's nothing there from that standpoint that we have seen directly linking our president to any of that.
Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know.
All right, that's it. And leading up to today, that was Brennan Today. Sarah Carter, senior national security correspondent, Circa.com. John Solomon, I guess, he's the big editor-in-chief of Circa.com. And Kirk Wiebe is with us, former senior analyst for the NSA, NSA whistleblower. Welcome all of you to the program. And I understand, Sarah, you have some breaking news today again. Tell me what you got.
John and I both have been working, you know, diligently on these stories regarding unmasking. I mean, we've tried to focus on the facts. And one of the things that we've discovered and we were able to publish today is that fact that the CIA is actually one of the greatest unmaskers of American in all of the agencies. So there are documentation to prove that. John and I both have been working on this. This is something that we had heard, but until we actually had the documentation, we didn't want to move forward with it. So it was very interesting today that at the hearing you hear, you know, Director John Brennan. He is directly asked by Trey Gowdy, did you unmask Americans? And emphatically he says, yes, I did. And unfortunately, those questions didn't go a lot deeper and a lot further publicly, but I'm sure that there will be more questions in a classified briefing.
Have you ever requested that a U.S. person's name be unmasked?
Yes, I have.
That is a stunning admission. Now, just to remind everybody, and John, I'll throw this to you, there is incidental surveillance of Americans. General Flynn, case in point, they were monitoring legally his soon-to-be counterpart in Russia, the Russian ambassador. General Flynn was on the line. In the case of that type of incidental surveillance, they're supposed to what? Minimize the process of the American. They're never supposed to unmask the name unless there's a special request. You also had earlier reported there was a dramatic increase in 2015 and 16 as it relates to unmasking. Now, that's the political cycle. 2015, remember, we started the process of choosing a Republican presidential candidate. What was the percentage increase?
Oh, yeah, it was a threefold increase in the searches of NSA data looking for Americans' names or Americans' data. So from 2013 to 2016, we saw a threefold increase. And there's only
I thought it was 600%. Am I wrong in my numbers?
No, it was about 300%. A little 300, 350. But you know, there's only two explanations for it. One is we suddenly let a whole bunch of terrorists in the country, and now we have 35,000 terrorists walking around. I don't think that's true. Or there's a sudden consumption of data that wasn't necessary to view before that now people want to look at. And I think that's always been the fear when you gave the intelligence community increasing backdoors to look at this data, which is that eventually they'd use it too much.
Kirk, before I get to you, I want to go back to Sarah for just a second here. You said you have evidence that not only did Brennan admit to unmasking today, but now John talks about the unmasking at this unprecedented level during an election season. And if you had a third component to this, I would ask, do you know, based on what you've seen and the evidence you're gathering, that the unmasking had a lot to do or seemingly had a lot to do with political operatives or people in politics versus those that are national security threats?
You know, Sean, I think that that's exactly the concern here. The concern is, was
Is it the concern, or do you know the names? Do you know the people?
We are still looking into this. We can't talk about everything that we're looking at right now because we do have stories that are coming out with regard to this and with regard to the evidence that we're able to obtain and share with the public. I think that there is a number of people that are concerned. There are a number of people concerned. Of course, we are concerned with how far this went. One of the things that John and I reported on was that in 2015, the rules were loosened in so much as that, you know, it extended not only to unmasking people for national security purposes that you would expect to be unmasked, but within those rules, there were contained instances where the FBI as well could also unmask people such as journalists, clergy members, doctors, lawyers, people that you would think would have an essentially stronger rights to privacy because of the information or because of their work of what they were doing. So we've seen that. We've seen that these rules were loosened. We also know that a number of people, politicians, lawmakers, as well as others, have been very concerned about the fact that some of this has led to what they believe is political espionage. I think the evidence as it unfolds will reveal what this was used for, and I think we have to be really careful, and that's why we're peeling back this onion one layer at a time and making sure that everything we have is what the American public is getting, the facts, the straight facts, and then how far these investigations choose to go in the future based on these facts will reveal even more.
That's pretty unbelievable. What is your take, Kirk, based on your background as a senior analyst for the NSA and an NSA whistleblower? Instinctively, I honestly feel that there's so many great people in our intelligence community, but I do feel that there is a deep state, highest level group of people, small percentage, that I believe that time will prove have not been honorable in their use of the tools that are given them, and especially their responsibility for protecting the constitutional rights of Americans. Am I wrong?
No, you're not, Sean. When I hear all of the bits and pieces that Sarah and John are putting together, together with the other articles we've seen in this entire morass of corruption, I sum it up as this way. We are witnessing a coordinated attack on the political system of our nation. And this whole Russia thing is a red herring designed to put the focus there and not here. How else do you explain the lack of ongoing investigations squarely on the DNC, the Clinton server, the Clinton Foundation, the unmasking? Where is it? It's buried. It's nowhere to be heard of.
This is Sarah, I hear you sighing. That's pretty unbelievable.
Well, I think that's a very valid point. And one as a journalist that I know John and I have brought up a number of times. Look, if there was evidence out there, Sean, we would report it. If we had...
By the way, I would report it too.
Absolutely. And, you know, based on the sources that we have, the information that we've gathered, based on the fact that Clapper, Brennan, Sally Yates, everyone, no one has ever said there was collusion and there was proof of evidence that President Trump or his associates colluded with the Russians in the election. Based on that fact alone, we have not been able to find evidence. The evidence that we have found is that people have been unmasked at an extent we would not have known had these leaks not happened. The fact that there are people within federal law enforcement and within the agencies, intelligence agencies, that are so concerned that the information that was obtained is being used for political espionage.
Wow. Wow. This is so unbelievable. All right. Stay right there. Sarah Carter, John Solomon, and Kirk Wiebe. And Sarah is going to be on Hannity tonight. I'm not sure if John Solomon can make it because you never know. He always, you know, he tries to go to bed by 10 o'clock. All right. As we continue, where does all of this Russia collusion story go when we have no evidence up to this point? There seems to be surveillance, unmasking, intelligence leaking that we've never had before, and it seems to be connected to politics. John, I'll start with you.
You know, in the intelligence community, there is a practice called subterfuge, where you can throw a head fake and try to get people to look elsewhere. And I think some of the most outrageous headlines of this scandal have been head fakes, have been subterfuge. John Brennan today gave some very political testimony in what was supposed to be an intelligence hearing. They asked him, did you have evidence? And he said, I was concerned. Well, that wasn't the question. We didn't ask you if you were concerned. We said, did you have evidence? He kept bobbing and weaving. And a normal intelligence professional would give very factual answers, and they'd be a boring witness, right? But Brennan sort of gave a lot of head fakes and nods to something that right now, currently, hasn't been proven. There isn't proof that Donald Trump's administration or team coordinated with Russia. And if they're going to great extents to keep that story alive, you have to ask, what are they hiding? And I think what Sarah and I are reporting on are some of those concerns. And in the next 24 hours, we're going to have something that's going to undercut a lot of the defense of unmasking. There's been a lot of talk about the legality of unmasking, and I think you should stay tuned in the next 24 hours, because we're going to be able to punch a hole in that for the first time.
Do you know how explosive
Absolutely. That
is, Sarah?
Yes, we do. And I think it's necessary. I think the stories that we've been working on should concern all Americans. And it deals with our Fourth Amendment rights. It deals with our rights as well to privacy and everything else and our protections. And these are things that that I think in all of this subterfuge, just as John had laid out, that, you know, you stick with the facts. You stick with what's truthful. You stick with the evidence. And that evidence has not led us to see that collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. If it's out there, I promise you, Sean, I will write that story. But I have not seen that yet. What we do see is that there is something going awry inside the intelligence community with unmasking, with searches into Americans and the unmasking of names and the leaking of evidence, that is something that people need to take a hard look at, because it involves every single one of us. And we will be breaking something within the hours that will make that very evident.
Kirk, when you add that to what's happening in terms of, you know, there is an emerging story with the possibility that it's a DNC operative WikiLeaks potential, and it's only a potential, and we're only investigating, and I'm being very clear, what does that mean? How deep is all of this? How scary is all of this?
It's extremely scary, if we allow it to be. The nation is under threat of being split down the middle. We know it is politically, but once the government disintegrates along those lines, we're really in trouble. We're on the verge of entering some chaotic period yet to be envisioned and described. But it doesn't bode well if we don't have brave people within government standing up right now. The truth has never been more important.
Is this why Sean Hannity, more than probably at any point in his career, is being slandered and smeared this badly? And it's not about me, but are we getting a little too close to the truth, perhaps, for some people?
Absolutely.
Sarah, you're not going to defend me. I'm not even going to ask you. I've got broad.
Don't say that, Sean.
I have broad shoulders. Thank you. Well, thank you all for being with us. These are two of the most important stories I think I've ever covered in my life, and we're not going to stop. And I'm going to lay out exactly this Kim.com connection and his statement and what it all means next. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Our toll-free telephone number is 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of this extravaganza, with so much going on today, I want to go back just a little bit if you're just joining us. And I don't know the answers. We're trying to put together the answers and the pieces of the puzzle. As it relates to who, you know, for months and months and months, do we have the montage of all of the Democrats saying the Russia collusion story, that there's no evidence up until last week? No evidence, no evidence, no evidence, no evidence. Listen.
But Mr. Clapper then went on to say that to his knowledge, there was no evidence of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. We did not conclude any evidence in our report. And when I say our report, that is the NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, any reflection of collusion between the members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that in our report. Was Mr. Clapper wrong when he said that?
I think he's right about characterizing the report, which you all have read.
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
Can you say definitively that there was collusion? There were people affiliated with the Trump campaign who were working with Russians to time the release of damaging information about Hillary Clinton that had been hacked either from John Podesta or the DNC?
I don't think we can say anything definitively at this point.
Have you seen anything, either intelligence briefings, through intelligence briefings, anything to back up any of the accusations that
Sure.
you've made?
They have the documentation that they did the hacking.
The hacking.
On the DNC.
Right.
And on some of us, you know, that
have. But the collusion, it. Though.
No, we have not.
Do you have evidence that there was, in fact, collusion between Trump associates and Russia during the campaign?
Not at this time.
Have you seen anything that suggests any collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign?
Well, there's an awful lot of smoke there, let's put it that way. People that might have said they were involved, to what extent they were involved, to what extent the president might have known about these people or whatever. There's nothing there from that standpoint that we have seen directly linking our president to any of that.
Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know.
I don't know. That's another word of way of saying no evidence. I was watching Brennan today. I don't trust Brennan. I don't trust Brennan at all. I think that there is a stench and a stink in our intelligence community at the highest levels. Now, let me be clear. I do believe there are really, really good good people that are doing great work in this day and age to protect our country, our homeland, against evil operatives all over the world. And it is a thankless, difficult, hard job. And they do the hard work of keeping us safe and secure in our homeland. I'd even go this far. It's probably 99%. But there are deep state operatives that have been undermining this president. And if we don't get to the bottom of it, I think their goal is to do as much damage and prevent him from accomplishing his promises to you, the American people. The two biggest threats now are news media with their rabid, inaccurate, tinfoil hat conspiracy reporting with no evidence. Now, by the way, I am open. Save all these. I am open to if any evidence does emerge, if there's any proof, I want to see it and hear it of Trump-Russia collusion. I want to see it, which leads us to Julian Assange. And I keep going back to this. I interviewed Julian. Julian, was it the Russians? Now, you don't have to trust Julian Assange if you don't want. But I have to point out, WikiLeaks has not been proven wrong on the information they have given out in 11 years. Not one time. And believe me, there are everybody that doesn't like WikiLeaks wants them to be wrong to say, see, you cannot trust them. Fake news. Well, there's never been. They're not CNN, because that's what CNN does. That's what MSNBC does. They advance this false narrative, lies, conspiracy theories. And when I asked Julian about Russia, here's what he said.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
Nothing from the DNC. Nothing at all. Now, Julian Assange, pay very close attention to when he talks about whistleblowers in the beginning of this tape. He's on Dutch TV taking risks and how they do this. And watch, he doesn't skip a beat as he goes dovetails right into the death of Seth Rich. Just listen to the talk about those that are whistleblowers that take risks. And he mentioned Seth Rich, because that to me is key.
Whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material and often very significant risks. As a 27-year-old that works for the DNC, who was shot in the back, murdered just 2 weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. So
That was just a robbery, I believe, wasn't it?
No, there's no finding. So
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that our sources take risks and they become concerned to see things occurring like that.
But was he one of your sources then? I mean,
we don't comment on who our sources are.
But why make the suggestion about a young guy being shot in the streets of Washington?
Because we have to understand how high the stakes are in the United States, and that our sources face serious risks. That's why they come to us, so we can protect their anonymity.
But it's quite something to suggest a murder. So, that's basically what you're doing.
Well, that others have suggested that. We are investigating to understand what happened in that situation with Seth Rich. I think it is a concerning situation. There's not a conclusion yet. We wouldn't be willing to state a conclusion, but we are concerned about it. And more importantly, a variety of WikiLeaks sources are concerned when that kind of thing happens.
Wow. Now, my interpretation, and I can only give my interpretation, he adamantly denies Russia is the source. If there's one person in the entire world that knows who the source is, it has to be Julian Assange. And the media pays no attention to him at all, whatsoever, in any way, shape, matter, or form. Now, back in May of 2015, Kim.com. In many ways, he's like a Julian Assange figure. He lives in New Zealand. He's got a copyright issue with the United States, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of controversial figure at 16. Well, remember, Julian Assange at 16 hacked the DOD, hacked the NASA. One of the things I said, with all of the hacking that has gone on all of the years and that our government has not put as a priority, cybersecurity, at some point we've got to blame our government, because at some point they knew they were hacked all of these times. And Julian is one example, and Kim.com is another example at 16, when 16-year-old kids keep hacking into government agencies and you don't do anything to fix it, it then becomes the government's fault that they're not doing their job protecting America's secrets. I'm sorry, it's just like, fool me once, twice, three times, shame on you. Fool me 1,000 times, shame on me. And that's what's missing here. And in the case of Kim.com, he predicted in May in a Bloomberg interview in 2015 that Julian Assange would be Hillary Clinton's biggest nightmare. Wow. May of 2015. How did he know? Here's what he said in the Bloomberg interview.
So what Julian Assange is doing is putting a spotlight on all these secrets.
How often do you talk to him?
Look, I like these guys, you know. I look up to them. I think they are very brave. They're going through a very hard time, you know, and they chose to do that for the betterment of all of us. So, yeah, I love to talk to them.
So you said you were going to bring the internet party to the U.S. in 2016.
Yeah.
Why? What's your goal?
Well, because I think there's a big group of people out there that disagree with what's going on. You know, they want to have their privacy back. They want to have internet freedom.
You tweeted that you were going to be Hillary's worst nightmare in 2016. How so?
Well, I have to say it's probably more Julian. But I'm aware of some of the things that are going to be roadblocks for her. So, you know, if I can provide some transparency with these people and make them part of what the Internet Party stands for, then, you know, I will be happy to do that.
You're saying Julian Assange is going to be Hillary's worst nightmare in 2016?
I think so, yeah. Well, he has access to information. Well, Hillary hates Julian. She is just an adversary of, I think, internet freedom. And
oh, wow. Kim.com has been talking about, and without going into my sources, methods, details, which the media would love to know, I'm just going to be quiet about that for now. Kim.com released the following today, and you're going to have to look into it. The media. Now, remember this. No evidence. I just played all the demo. No evidence of collusion. They ran with the story anyway. Okay. Now we have Julian Assange and what he said about Seth Rich. And is it possible, I'm asking a question, is it possible that there was a honest, truth-seeking broker at the DNC, let's take all names out of it, a whistleblower that saw the horrid treatment of Bernie Sanders and the cheating of Bernie Sanders and the betrayal of Bernie Sanders supporters by the DNC. Remember, WikiLeaks resulted in Debbie Wasserman Schultz, six other people. They're out on the eve of the convention. And maybe the source for WikiLeaks from the very beginning. Maybe. I'm saying maybe. Pay attention, media, because you're very slow. And maybe that's the source of the WikiLeaks leak. Now, if that's true, I got to be careful because a bunch of CNN people don't know how to comprehend if that's true. And I'm asking questions, which is what a smart person ought to do. Something they don't do. They just report fake news and conspiracy theories with zero evidence, as the Democrats say. If that's true, that means the whole Russia conspiracy theory is blown out of the water. I don't have 100% confirmation yet, but I'm sharing with you all the information as it becomes available to me as we put the pieces of the puzzle together. Kim.com writes, I know that Seth Rich was involved in the DNC leak. Seth Rich was a hero. I know this because in late 2014, a person contacted me about helping me start a branch of the Internet Party in the United States. That's a party that he was supporting in New Zealand. He called himself Panda. I know that Panda was Seth Rich. By the way, I have confirmed this through other sources that he used this name. Other sources beyond Kim.com. Panda advised me that he was working on voter analytics tools and other technologies that the Internet Party may find helpful. I communicated with Panda on a number of topics, including corruption, the influence of corporate money in politics. He wanted to change that from the inside. I was referring to what I knew when I did an interview with Bloomberg in New Zealand in May of 2015, what I just played you. In that interview, I hinted that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks would release information about Hillary Clinton in the upcoming election. The Rich family has reached out to me to ask that I be sensitive to their loss in my public comments. That request is totally and entirely reasonable. I have consulted with my lawyers. I accept that my full statement should be provided to the authorities, and I am prepared to do so, so there can be a full investigation. My lawyers will speak with the authorities regarding the proper process. If my evidence is required to be given in the United States, I would be prepared to do so if appropriate arrangements are made, meaning he's got this copy. Copyright issue is my interpretation. I would need a guarantee from the special counsel Mueller on behalf of the United States of safe passage from New Zealand to the U.S. and back. In the coming days, we will be communicating with the appropriate authorities to make the necessary arrangements. In the meantime, I will make no further comment. This is a piece of the puzzle. If you are a journalist, and what they're going to do is what they do to Julian. They're going to smear him. They're going to smear this guy, just like I have been smeared. How bad has it been the last 24 hours for me, Linda, on all of this because I dare to ask questions. You know what the amazing thing? The conspiracy theory media, CNN is the worst. NBC is the second worst. They have peddled a conspiracy lie, as we point out, with zero evidence for all these months. And then they say, Hannity's peddling a conspiracy theory and he's hurting the family. Are you kidding? I care about this family. I try to be the best Christian I can be. Of course I care about people.
Can I just make a note that the parents released a thank you note with regard to the GoFundMe page that his brother started?
Hold
on a second. His brother started that page in March of 2017. So for a family who wants nothing more to know about what happened to their son, they certainly aren't acting like it. So I'm not really listening to the DNC spokesperson who says he's with the family.
Okay. Neither am I. I've not confirmed that, by the way. 800-941-SEAN. You know something? All my career, I have done things and investigated things, and I usually get proven right. I don't know what the outcome of this is, ladies and gentlemen. I don't. But I'm certainly looking deeper, and I'm asking more questions, and I'm working harder than everybody in the media, the sheep, every sheep out there combined that has lied with no evidence for months and months and months because they got a political agenda to destroy the president. Yeah, like everybody said when I was investigating Obama, yeah, Hannity, you're risking your career. Asking questions is a risk to my career? Okay, I can live with that. I can live with myself. I'll sleep well at night. And getting to the truth is all I'm trying and desirous to do here because I don't think we're being told the truth. I think the Russia-Trump narrative is a lie and has been a lie from day one. And I think one last point. If this blows up in their face, the media, it will be literally the Scarlet Dan Rather on human growth hormone steroids, and they're done. They will never have credibility again, nor do they deserve it. We'll see what happens. I want to remind you, and I sleep well at night because my conscience is clear and I work hard. But anyway, I sleep better than ever, and I do have insomnia, but I sleep better than ever. A pillow has changed my life for the better. My Pillow, invented by Mike Lindell. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer. Now you can, too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity and get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get 40% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Or you can spend more sleepless nights on a pillow that doesn't work for you. Or go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code Hannity or call 800-919-6090. Promo code Hannity. Mike's special four-pack. Two MyPillow premium pillows. Two go-anywhere pillows. 40% off. Those pillows arrive in your life. You start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and you deserve. MyPillow.com. Promo code Hannity.
Each and every day, Hannity's got something new.
Going to wrap things up today. Full coverage tonight on the latest that has happened out of England and, of course, the deep state and, yes, the Russia conspiracy narrative. Dr. Gorka tonight. Also, Monica Crowley, Jay Sekulow tonight. We'll be checking in with Sarah Carter, John Solomon breaking news, and much, much more. Michelle Malkin and Lou Dobbs, 10 Eastern. Set your DVR. Probably the most important monologue I think I ever do in the history of the show. Tell your friends, roll your tape. See you back here tomorrow.